It's 8:18. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, after hearing reports about the rowdy behavior and increasing garbage problems along the Weber River due to growth and uninformed river runners, a meeting was held this week to figure out how to begin solving some of those issues as we move into the busy summer season. On behalf of the Summit County Council, member Kim Carson attended that meeting. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie.
The meeting was called by whom?
The meeting was called by Mike Newton, and Mike Newton is one of the council members from Morgan County. He's our convener.
Okay. And what stakeholders were at the meeting?
At this particular meeting, Tina Cannon, another council member from Morgan County, came in for a while. Sarah Jo Dickinson, who is a local ecologist and involved in a lot of different environmental issues. We had a couple of our operators, people who work on providing commercial trips on the river. So we had Donna Zakirmi from Destination Sports and Justin Brown from All Season Adventures. And we really appreciate their commitment to finding some solutions. We had Andy Pappas. He's from the state, from Division of Natural Resources, and he has a specialty in the area of water quality. We also had Paul Burnett, and he's from Trout Unlimited and is very interested in water quality issues and improving waterways, of course, for fishing access.
So,
and myself.
So of all of those folks then listed, I mean, who has the jurisdiction to do anything?
We all do in some respects. That's what makes this fairly complicated is at the put-in, which is just on this side of the Summit County line, we have UDOT that owns some property where people access the river. We have the Division of Wildlife Resources that owns a section of river. And then once you get on the river, you have a number of different landowners who are primarily ranchers or farmers or just property owners along the way. And people sometimes disrespect their properties. And then others take advantage of it and have a station where people can stop and, you know, they'll sell things to them that they may be in need of. And then at the takeout, that property is owned actually by Morgan County, but it's never been improved. And then you have a couple other spots along the way that are some problem areas. There's a really low bridge near Croydon. And often you have to portage around that bridge, and you run into, you have the railroad that owns property there, UDOT that has property there, and then also I believe there's a little bit owned by Croydon, by the cement plant up there.
Did you get any new information about the dilemma that we're seeing? And it's known as the hen tag stretch, I guess, Hennifer to Taggart.
Yes, it is.
Right.
The hen tag reach of the Weber River, yes.
Okay.
Well, we did discuss more specifics as far as where some of the problem areas, and we discussed possible solutions for those problem areas. Morgan County, we have Mike Newton proposing to his council, hopefully on their agenda next week, to have them do some minor development of their property at the takeout, provide garbage receptacles, at least porta potties and signage, and then improve the parking area there. Pardon me. And they're going to he's going to ask for a budget of about $10,000 to complete those initial improvements on that area. And then we also talked about at the put-in on the Summit County side, specific signage that we want. We're going to have an initial part of actual enforceable items such as littering, public intoxication, requirement for life jackets. And then underneath that, put what people's general responsibilities are that are things that they should be doing on the river, but we really don't have any code to enforce it at this point.
Okay. And so can those solutions be done short term for this summer season?
Yes, we're hoping to get initial signage proposal finished by tomorrow afternoon, and then circulate that. There were several stakeholders that weren't in attendance. There wasn't anybody there from state parks. We didn't have representatives from either of the sheriff's department, but we feel like we can get the language done. We've already been emailing back and forth over the last 3 weeks with some tentative language and thoughts, you know, on how to narrow that down and make it more specific. We're going to be doing two types of signage. One with general safety rules and the enforceable items. And then we are going to have an area separately for those that are really interested in the cultural and historical significance of the river.
Yeah. So are we also talking about some long-term solutions? Because I'm guessing, to start, you know, cleaning up the porta potties and hauling out garbage for Morgan County could be, you know, an expense that they may not have budgeted for.
Yes, eventually, you know, they may need to consider, one thing we talked about is charging for parking at the takeout. That would create some revenue for them. We've also talked about creating a conservation area in that area and having tags required to be able to float. So no matter what your flotation device is, it would have to have a conservation tag on it. And then those conservation tag monies could be distributed amongst the entities that are providing the support services.
So you don't expect that?
That would be a long-range goal.
Okay. All right. And any other solutions that were discussed about implementing?
You know, we are talking about having the two different sheriff's offices and the highway patrol conducting blitzes. You do have a lot of people that leave the parking area inebriated. So there's a number of DUIs. That's already been done, but we talked about maybe streamlining those and have more specific locations and times of the year when those took place. As far as the portage options at Croydon, there's some real safety issues there where people come out and, you know, they need to get over a railroad track or under a railroad track and a major roadway where you have truck traffic coming and going from the Lost Creek area and the Croydon cement plant. So we really need to look at that area and see how we can have safer passage for those that are using that as a portage. We also talked about having the livery side of, you know, the commercial operators do have to register with the state. However, those that just go and provide, like, rent tubes there at the parking lot at the put-in, they're not required to have a commercial license or be regulated in any ways. So we would like to have them be considered a livery, and that would help provide more regulation as far as those that go up and rent the tube.
Okay. Have you scheduled another meeting to kind of see?
Yes, we have. We've already scheduled our next meeting for the first week of June and set some goals. We also decided that we need some more detailed maps of the area to show, so we are very clear on who owns what land, where problem areas are, and where specific signage should be located. So Summit County, through our GIS department, I've gotten the approval to help provide support in that area.
At some point,
so we'll
are you going to take
on that in the next 2 weeks?
At some point, are you going to be taking public input on all of this, or is this just kind of a done deal?
You know, we need to bring that up at the next meeting. As far as signage, it's really up to the agencies that are responsible for those areas to come up with their signage. And we are getting public input from the respect of the commercial operators that are using the area. They're definitely actively engaged. But, you know, I know that there'll be people that won't be happy with more enforcement or rules on what type of flotation device they could use on the river. However, those are really important safety issues.
I guess
I don't know that that's something that we can, you know, back off on.
I guess I was thinking more of, you know, the parking charge and the permitting charges, the conservation permit.
Yes, if we went forward with that, as far as a resource management plan, there would be an opportunity then if there was major changes to how the entire stretch was managed, then there would definitely be a public process involved in that.
Okay. Hey, well, I've got you on the phone. Any update on Summit County's efforts to launch its own public lands initiatives?
Yes, we had a meeting Tuesday on Monday afternoon. And the original stakeholders we brought together to have a discussion on just a review of what our last proposal was, what has happened since then. And everybody, for the most part, was encouraging as far as having us move forward with a public lands proposal as an individual proposal and not part of a bigger package. So our next steps are to contact a few people who were not there and then also look at how this would fit into our overall work plan between now and the end of the year and how it would work into that budget-wise. This will be fairly time-intensive, so we'll need to have that discussion with council and then decide where we want to fit this in.
Okay. Hey, Kim, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, not today. Everybody enjoy today because it sounds like we're in for a few days of rain and snow possibly.
Yeah. So. All right. Summit County Council Member Kim Carson, thanks for your time. Well, there are changes happening at the Park City Learning Academy. One of those is the departure recently of the Academy's administrator. In the studio with details, I have Ben Belknap. He is the school district's assistant superintendent of wellness. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So just before spring break announced that Learning Academy principal Tracy Sorstrom leaving, who's been overseeing the Academy since her departure?
So we've had kind of a team effort on that. I have been helping a little bit with the operational piece as things have come up, necessary things. Jacqueline Knapp, our special ed director, has been covering any kind of special ed issues that have come up. But mostly, I think our real all-star has been the counselor over there, Shannon Hayes, who was a teacher for years previous to that. And he's really stepped up and kind of taken on a leadership role. And it's been really great working with him.
Okay. And I'm just curious why Tracy left mid-year. That's usually unusual to go.
Yeah, it was a little unusual. So Tracy got a new job in Granite School District as a principal at an elementary school down there. And it was going to be a big transition for her. And with the things that she needed to do to get things going and with the direction we were taking things, it was really difficult to or it was a tough expectation to put on her to say, hey, you're going to be gone in a couple of months anyway, and now we want you to be an integral part of the planning. So it just kind of worked out, you know, and it was a big loss for us. She was a really great administrator. But
so before we talk about the direction you're taking in the Learning Academy serves what student population?
So we target students who just don't respond typically to a regular kind of normal, as it were, school day. These are students who may struggle with like anxiety about going into the big school, or you know, maybe they learn better in smaller groups, that kind of stuff. So we have about 70 to 80 students over there. They're there for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it could be attendance issues and we can work with them to get them there. It could be credit. We do some credit recovery over there if we got students who are really, you know, credit deficient. So basically just anybody who needs an alternative.
Yeah. So, and it serves 9 through 12 or mm-hmm. 10 through 12?
It is typically 10 through 12, but there are a few exceptions.
Okay. And we've got how many teachers there?
Currently, we have 4 teachers there.
Okay. And are we going to reduce that amount? Is that the plan?
Yeah, we are. It's and none of our teachers lost their jobs. It worked out to where they were able to work their way into other positions at Treasure Mountain and the high school through attrition, retirement, and things. But with the new direction that we're taking it, yeah, we're cutting back to 2 teachers there instead of 4.
So how does it work? I mean, all of the core classes are taught here, and then the students do have to go to the high school to make up their elective courses or to get the rest of the credits?
In the current model?
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. They do, it is the 4 core classes that are taught there. And there are some electives that they work on over at the Learning Academy as well. They do a lot of like online platforms for credit recovery and things like that. But there are some students who are there full time at the Learning Academy, and there are some students that kind of go back and forth to electives back at the school and you know, to some core classes at the Learning Academy.
Yeah. So how does somebody get, I mean, do they have to request admittance into it, or it can be a recommendation?
Yeah, it could be either of those things.
Okay.
Our Treasure Mountain counselors identify students who may respond well to it, and then they work with the staff over at the Learning Academy for that. And also throughout the school year. I think generally in the current model, they have a pretty good idea at the beginning of the year who's going to be there. But throughout the year, for different various reasons, they might add or.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the direction then.
Sure.
Because I know a lot of training was done, it seems like just last summer. Was this for the new model of the program? Or?
That was our training last summer. Definitely prepared us to roll this model out. But it wasn't specifically implemented for this particular rollout. Essentially, the vision behind what we're doing here is we have this static, essentially, population of students, 70-ish students who are there. And as we look at the needs of our high school, in particular, there are more students that we could serve through changing our service delivery a little bit. Last time I checked, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, there were over 200 students at our high school with more than one F. And when looking at that, my philosophy, of course, you know, I'm a psychologist, and if you're a hammer, every problem's a nail, right? So my view on that is if you're a high school student, you have more than one F, there's something bigger going on than the academic piece. There's something missing there. So the vision behind this is, can we identify those students and bring them over to the Learning Academy in more of a kind of a therapeutic atmosphere? We're going to change our staffing around, work with them on the core instruction, but not on that standard block schedule, and then bring in social workers, bring in experiential learning, and recognize that these students probably need more to enrich their learning, and also to kind of discover, you know, the reason behind why they're struggling so much.
So I guess what's the idea? I mean, what's the district trying to accomplish with the academy?
Sure. So with our focus on the whole student, the idea is that if we can, going all the way back to, I'm going to nerd out now as the psychologist part of me, but Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Like the very foundational piece of that is, do you have safety and security? You know, do you have your basic needs met, or, you know, your mental health? And that must be established before we can go into the challenge of learning and that kind of thing. So the view is looking at this population of students that maybe, I don't know, 150, 200 students or so. Can we kind of recognize that they're very credit deficient, you know, and pull them back and help them discover in more of kind of a therapeutic atmosphere what's going on, with the idea that it will put them ahead of the game in academics if we can establish that.
Yeah. So students can get their high school degree then?
Yes.
Through this, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And in terms of the future then, I mean, I haven't heard anything about the academy as part of this 8-month, 9-month master planning process. When do we hear about what's the future of this?
This, the... The this is essentially the future of the Academy. As we roll this model out, we expect that it'll grow and we'll be able to add more staff. As far as the actual master planning piece, we're really going to make a push to brand this Learning Academy as not a separate building, a separate entity. We're not going to hire like another administrator over that. It's going to be an extension of the high school.
So within the physical part of the high school?
No, it'll still be in that building. But you know, I don't know, the East Campus or something like that. Mm-hmm. If you've got any good ideas for names, we're open to suggestions.
And could you physically hold more than the 70, 80 students that you have?
That would be tough. I think we could within the actual physical building, but it would take probably some creativity and some remodeling inside the structure. So this next year is going to be kind of our pilot as we roll things out, and we'll see where things go. And as the need grows, I think then, you know, we'll get our operations people on it and see what we can do.
Yeah. So have you kind of implemented any of these changes? I mean, right now you're just trying to get through the school year. You've got just a handful of weeks left.
Yeah. The last couple of months, we've put together a team of about 10 of us throughout the district, some staff at the high school, some staff at Treasure Mountain, with the task of rolling out what the scheduling piece would look like, the credit recovery piece, and what the daily programming would look like within the new structure. So we've been laying all the groundwork, but it's been business as usual there, and we'll roll it out beginning this next school year.
Okay. Hey, before I let you go, just an update on the wellness projects that you've been working on since joining the district. It was a tough start finding all of the people. I mean, we've put a lot of money into it, approving the new counselors, the psychologists, the interventionists. Are we all fully staffed at this point?
I think we're looking really good right now. We have an abundance of support and really great people in place. Currently, it doesn't look like we're going to need any additional staff in that area.
Yeah, and there was some concern just about bringing all of these new people on at one time. Have we kind of settled out with that?
It's continuing to settle. I just met with one of our social workers in the elementary school just a couple weeks ago, and to resolve some issues still related to clarity and job responsibilities between social workers and counselors. And sometimes, you know, we're running into some issues where they're kind of stepping on each other a little bit, trying to, doing the same thing twice. But we are, it's been a great year. We've really ironed out a lot of the kinks, and the school board has been incredibly supportive, and the new superintendent. And I think by next year, I think we should be smooth sailing.
Yeah. And then how are we going to measure success when it comes to what we're doing here?
So we got a few different points of data that we're looking at. One is our chronic absentee. If students are missing, you know, more than 15% of the time, that's considered, you know, chronically absent. And our numbers right now are around 15 to 20% in the high school. If we can see those go down, that's going to be a big piece. And of course, just looking at our students, we're going to look at discipline referrals as those go down, referrals to our intervention counselors for mental health related issues, just credits and students on track to graduate.
Hmm. Those absentee numbers, that's up to a fifth of the students don't attend. Do we know why?
Well, it's tricky because this is all of our students. And so there are some of our really high-end students who are, you know, well ahead and have plenty of credits to graduate and are already accepted into major universities, who are on parent releases, who are participating in extracurricular things. And that gets rolled into the number of our other, you know, truant kids. And so we're working with Caitlin O'Connor, our data specialist, to kind of disaggregate that data and determine what the degree of truancy is. But it's an alarming number, and we need to really establish the culture that at school attendance is important, and we need to give these kids reasons to believe that it's an important place to be.
Okay. And anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't think so, but I'm happy to come back as we roll this thing out, and we're very excited about it, and I just really appreciate the board's support on this to do these innovative things.
Okay. That's Park City School District Assistant Superintendent of Wellness, Belknap. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time 8:43. Well, the race for three seats on the Park City Council already heating up. We have two council members announcing they are seeking re-election and one resident announcing his intent to run. But if you've never run for office before, it can be tricky to know where to start. Here to give us a preview of a How to Run for Office workshop coming up next Tuesday, I have Park City Recorder Michelle Kellogg along with Community Engagement Manager Linda Jager. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hi. So we'll start with you, Michelle. The basics, when does the filing window open for candidacy?
So it's the first week in June, June 3rd through 7th, 8 to 5, at the municipal offices on MARSAC. And my office is, you file with me in the executive offices.
Okay. And what do you need to do to file?
So you just need to, there's certain requirements. You need to be a citizen of the U.S. and a Park City registered voter. You need to live within the city limits the past 12 months consecutively. And those are the basic ones.
Yeah, and I guess the only glitch I remember hearing about in the last several years is somebody living on Snow's Lane, and it thought he lived in the city limits, and it turned out he didn't. So any other glitches that you recall of?
No. So if you're unsure if you live in the city limits, if you have the 84060 zip code, you're good.
Guaranteed.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's talk a little bit about just the workshop itself, Linda. You're putting this on. Do you get a good turnout? Because I know you've done it before.
Yeah, actually, it's been done for the past few election cycles. We just see this as a great opportunity to share this information with folks who have thought about running in the past. And it's just some good basics. Again, Michelle will be sort of covering the nuts and the bolts. We will have Mayor Andy giving a welcome. Councilmember Tim Henney will just talk kind of from the front line as a council member about time commitments and roles and responsibilities. Margaret Plain, from our attorney's office, will come and talk about a little bit of the legal side of things to consider when you're going from a private citizen to an elected official. And I'll also be talking about some opportunities to serve the city in our boards and commissions, maybe Leadership Park City, just a great way to get involved with local government.
Okay, it's happening Tuesday, May 21st, 5 to 6 p.m. at the Room 301 in the Park City Library. I wanted to follow up, as you mentioned, the council participates in more events and meetings than just the regular weekly city council meetings. So what can you tell us? I mean, what kind of time commitment do you need to be a council person?
You know, I think that's probably best answered by council directly, but quite a bit. Obviously, getting ready for council meetings, the packets are quite extensive. So reading the materials, which is are provided to council ahead of time. And when the packets are published, Michelle does a great job with that. But council's members serve as liaison to different committees and different initiatives that the city does. So there might be some meetings with groups involved in those efforts. And then our council is extremely passionate about community engagement. So they are really great about getting involved in community events and activities. So things on the weekend, coffees with council, operate with council, ribbon cuttings of trails, really just community celebrations. So it's as much, I think, as you allow it to take time, but it's a great opportunity.
Michelle, can you tell us how much it pays to be a, you know?
Yes. So the city council makes $1,914 a month. They also get health insurance, and if they already have health insurance, they can take that as a payment in lieu.
Okay. And any other benefits?
That's about it.
Okay. And realistically, then, you can't be a council person and live on that salary. I mean, it's not a full-time job.
You know, I think it depends. Different situations for different council members. We do have, you know, Becca Gerber works full-time and also balances her role on council, as several others do. So it's really up to the individual and making it work for them. But We, you know, really invite everyone in the community to come in and learn about the opportunity. We will have Spanish translation available as well to, again, welcome our entire community to learn more.
So she's the only one who actually has a full-time job of the council and mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody else is either retired or self-sufficient, I suppose.
Or part-time, working with part-time physicians as well.
Yeah. As you mentioned, one topic you'll be tackling is transitioning from a private citizen to a public official. I mean, what kind of challenges can that bring?
I think, again, just that will probably be best answered by Margaret at the workshop, as I'm not the legal expert. But I think just considerations of sort of your role in the community, a lot higher visibility, and, really being involved in different initiatives and what you find important. But just things to consider about, how you're speaking out on certain issues and other things too. There's definitely some special considerations, but Margaret's the expert there, so I encourage folks to come out.
How many candidates must apply before we go to primary?
So since we have 3 open seats, you need more than double in order for the primary. So if 7 people file for candidacy, we would be required to have a primary.
Okay.
7 or more.
And then take the top 6?
And then, yes. Okay. Because the primary eliminates it down to exactly double the amount of seats.
Okay. And we don't have districts, so it's just the popular vote, right,
that
determines council?
They're all out at large.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see. So the primary would be August 13th, then, if that indeed needs to happen.
Yes.
Linda, can you tell us, for those who may not be interested in a position on the council, what other board and commission openings we've got at this point?
Yeah, I think I know we were recently doing a public art advisory board recruitment. I'm not sure if that's yet filled. We have the Board of Adjustment that's looking for some interested individuals to serve there. We do post that on the website. I will have information for each of the boards and commissions that are looking for participation right now. I mentioned leadership. That's such a great opportunity to get to know not only about the workings at City Hall, but the community in general. So folks are encouraged to apply for that. Applications will open early this summer. I'm a graduate, and I can't say enough about the program. I think it's really great to get involved. So really a combination of things there.
Okay. Again, that's Tuesday, the 21st, 5 p.m. at the Park City Library, room 301. Wanted to ask you, while I've got you here, any idea what caused yesterday's water main break? Or is it fixed?
It is fixed. I actually just heard from Clint McAfee, and there were 2 water main breaks just before noon, and suspected cause was a pressure surge, which was related to the power outage. The Empire break was on a transmission line, and no customers were out of water. Minimal damage. It's being repaired today. The Sampson break was a bit larger. It did put some customers out of water. We let them know and made the MARC facilities available to those that needed showers and such. It was repair was completed about 8 p.m. last night. Some minor property damage to a house on King Road, but everything is working well.
Yeah. I also noticed more steel plates there at the intersection of Main Street and Heber Avenue yesterday. This is very near where we had that huge water main break last year, and we had that huge hole there for weeks. Did it break again?
I think they're just finishing up on some repairs. I can get back to you with more information, but just some minor finish work there.
Okay. And then I also noticed this multi-thousand gallon plastic tank being filled from a fire hydrant in my neighborhood yesterday. Did that have anything to do with the water outage?
I'm not quite sure on that, but I'm happy to look into that and let you know as well.
Yeah, just kind of curious.
Sure.
All of that water that comes out of a hydrant.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, actually, a couple of things. Tomorrow is bike to school, work, and play day.
In the snow.
In the snow. Hopefully not. It's held off, but we really encourage community members to come out and join us. Kids will be staging at several spots throughout the community and riding their bikes to work, and we'll have a celebration at Treasure Mountain Junior High parking lot, celebrating all things bicycle. And also next week on Monday, we'll be having a community open house from 6 to 7 at the community room at the library, talking about the Woodside Phase 2 project. So folks that are interested in our affordable housing initiative are encouraged to come out as well. We'll have the architect there and lots of information about that project.
Is that just to kind of look to see what's being built, or is this more to learn about the lottery process?
The lottery process and such will be coming shortly. This is more specifically about this project and what to expect. And, things are getting close on Phase 1. I don't know if you get to drive by, but we're getting really close on finishing those up, so it's really exciting.
Okay, Linda Jagger, Michelle Kellogg, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks.